Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Chase Thomas podcast. The Chase Thomas podcast. My nephew needs me to record. See, I already hate it.
All right, welcome back to the Chase Thomas podcast, where I am still the aforementioned Chase Thomas, and I'm not the only person who uses the word aforementioned in a basketball podcast or medium, any kind of basketball telecast, because Mark Jones, the Sacramento Kings play-by-play guy, used it last night during the Pistons game. And if you're wondering why I was watching Kings Pistons on a Monday night, it's because I'm a basketball sicko. No, I don't know. It's Kings week. Shout out to Carlin Gabe, NBA.com, who put me on like this idea of like, because I kind of get overwhelmed. Mark, who's also here, Mark Schindler, is here of Premium Hoops NBA, Indy Cornrows, Fear the Sword, one of my favorite basketball writers around right now. So go check him out if you have not already done so. But Carlin put me on this of like, I get a little overwhelmed, Mark. I don't know how you break up your basketball watching, covering multiple teams like you do. But I have to pick. So, I mean, I watch every Hawks game, but I want to dive in because I feel like I don't have a good read on certain teams. So I'm just doing a full week of Kings basketball this week. And then next week, I'm going to do a full week of somebody else to get a good idea. Is that something you do? What do you do?
Yeah, man. Well, it helps because I know you do like every sport. I have no idea how to keep up with it, to be completely honest. I just do strictly basketball. I do draft stuff on top as well, so keeping up with college hoops. But it helps that I have like a scouting service, so I can go and watch things through without commercials. Like it's just live ball situations. Like if I just want to watch, like say Cade Cunningham's possessions, then I can go do that. But also I try and watch two games of every team a week because it's impossible to watch every game. But even sometimes watching two of every team a week is hard. I think it just depends. It fluctuates. Like I watch every single Pacers and Cavs game, but then so you see a lot of teams conjunctively through that. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, part of it's just, I'm always curious about stuff. So yeah. I always go and watch things or, you know, dive into some of the numbers, and then that leads me to watching more. And, you know, it's hit or miss. It just depends on the week and what I'm doing. But, I mean, I really don't keep up with any other sport. Like, I watch college football on Saturdays just to keep myself sane and not watch basketball every living second. But, I don't have the time to be, like, a fully invested person who's, like, diving into other sports right now.
Look, man, it's hard to prioritize and to balance everything. It's just a lot of Google Docs, a lot of Google Sheets, just keeping at it. But I don't know, like you, I feel like I run into burnout if I'm watching too much of one thing. I need to have that variety, and I need to have different sports on, different things. Like I need to watch Succession. I need to balance it out a little bit, or I will get frustrated with watching Marvin Bagley do whatever it is that Marvin Bagley does on a basketball floor, because I watched it last night. And Mark, I've got great news for you. Not great news if you're a Marvin Bagley stan. He's very bad and still quite bad, and played a lot. Has not played, I think it was since the second game in the season. But yeah, it was not a good showing, but they still blew out the Pistons, who are just like, they have 19 point guards. Like there's a Frank Jackson in there. There's a Corey Joseph. There's a Killian Hayes. There's a Cade Cunningham. That is just a weird, weirdly constructed roster. I don't know. Did not enjoy it. I hope the Pistons are not on my docket for the foreseeable future, but I do think the Kings are incredibly interesting in the way they work. And you're like, oh, I can see how this works. I can see how Buddy Hield fits into being got benched. Damian Mitchell is so much fun to watch defensively. Like there was a play where like Halliburton has a steal in the category there from last night. And this is why like you can't just like box score count this kind of stuff, because Mitchell forced the steal because Halliburton just had to step in, but the passing lane was skewed because Mitchell's arms and just his on-ball defense was so good that I don't remember. It might have been Josh Jackson who just threw it away, and Halliburton was just right there for a fast break. But like little things like that, I liked seeing because I'd heard and seen clips of Mitchell, but I had not seen his defense in action, and that was pretty great. Big Damian Mitchell guy, and then Rashawn Holmes is just an absolute delight in what he was doing on the offensive glass in the third quarter. Mark, it was great. That's my Sacramento Kings update for you.
Oh no, I love the Kings. It's funny. As bad as the Kings have been, like they're in a really odd stage of like they have young guys, they have intrigue, and especially because of the year when Dave Yeager was their coach, and they almost made the playoffs. I think they ended up as the 9 seed. They were just like really fun. Like I think they were number one in pace in the league that year. Really good, just transition offense. They actually play pretty solid defense too. And ever since then, they've just never really been able to quite reclaim that. I think this is the year where you're hoping that they break through, but it's just like, I mean, as good as some of the guys have played, like Harrison Barnes has probably been their best player so far this year. Mm-hmm. They've needed it to be De'Aaron Fox. Like De'Aaron Fox was a borderline all NBA guy last year for me. Or I at least thought it should have been an all-star. And it just has been a really rough go of it for him to start the year. He's been better over the recent weeks, but
he loves long twos.
He does love his long twos off the dribble. But like overall, it's just like the team still just isn't quite there. Like the way that they filled out the rest of their roster isn't great. Like they have a lot of bigs, a lot of fours. They really don't have a true wing on the roster, and they have a lot of guards. And it's just, so their lineup constructions are so wonky, but like you mentioned, like Davion Mitchell has been a joy to watch this year. One of my favorite things is when a guard or just ball handler in general, has to play against him for the first time. It's kind of awesome to watch. I've clipped that a bunch this year, just like him, you know, absolutely hounding like, you know, Donovan Mitchell at the point of attack, or, you know, him against Cade Cunningham was really fun yesterday too.
You watched it yesterday.
Yeah. Oh yeah, I did watch yesterday.
Okay. What were your takeaways then, by and large? Were my takeaways right on par with you? Like Halliburton had this step back, this hesitation step back three, which was just preposterous. Like Luka Garza had a really rough go of it every time he was on the floor.
That's been the year for him. He's not ready for NBA competition right now, as far as I'm concerned. I think he should still be in the G League, but it's been tough because Kelly Olynyk's out right now, so he had to come up and play minutes. Tyrese was really good yesterday. He's had an awesome second year to get started. He started a little rocky too, but he's done a little bit more on the ball this year, which has been kind of funky because, I mean, Fox is a really, really good player with the ball in his hands, not quite the same without it. So kind of navigating what it's like with both them on the court and Tyrese having the ball in his hands has been interesting. And I don't really know what to make of it yet, especially with like the news coming out from The Athletic. I think it was yesterday that Luke Walton is on the hot seat. They're so funky. But yeah, Tyrese has done like a ton. There was a stretch last year. I think there was like a 10 game stretch when De'Aaron Fox didn't play. And I think it was a game against the Warriors when Tyrese had his career high last year. Was him running just a ton of pick and roll, looked really good, doing stuff that just wasn't really expecting him to do his rookie year. And he's been a joy to watch, really blossom as a player.
The thing with the Kings though is that they don't know what they want to do because they know what they want to run. And Halliburton and Fox are so good running, and Rashawn Holmes is a great rim running center, but like. They can't all the time, so they just really struggle to put teams away, and we saw that a little bit last night with the third string, Frank Jackson hitting every corner three imaginable for the Pistons to keep them in it, and Sadiq Bey doing stuff, who I like. Sadiq Bey might be the best player on the Pistons right now. Cade Cunningham was awesome, but Sadiq Bey, man, that guy is fearless. Fearless. I like Sadiq Bey. Cade's shot seems to be coming along a little bit better. He's a really smart rebounder, which I thought was really cool. Like he just knows how to be in the right spot, and he just seems like he's going to be somebody who just the game comes easy for him right away. But it's also just that like once the 3-point percentage gets around 35%, and he shot the ball better than he has to this point in the season, he's going to be just an exceptional, exceptional player. But like something I jotted down was Killian Hayes. When are we having the Killian Hayes' Frank Ntilikina 2.0 conversation? What are we doing here? What this is not working. We need to toss this out. This is out. Don't enjoy this. It's the Marvin Bagley thing where it's like, okay, you can't do Marvin Bagley in a big if you're the Kings. This doesn't work either. But Tristan Thompson, like high energy, he's been really good for them. I liked what he brought. I like the just him and Rashawn Holmes doing the same kind of thing. So you're not really missing a beat when you're replacing those guys. But I don't know. And then the back and forth with Ty and Fox, and you spoke to this, is Halliburton has the ball in his hands more now this year. That means Fox has to do more spot up stuff, and he is not comfortable with that. Like when you watch these possessions, the half court's just weird because, like you said, Harrison Barnes has been their best player, and he'll drive and draw fouls every now and then, but like they don't really know what to do in the half court yet. And I don't even know if that even falls on Walton, because I'm like, what is he supposed to do with this construction? Like, I don't, this group is meant to do stuff in a free flowing early Lakers days that he had with Lonzo and everybody. Like, I don't think this roster has, like you said, the wing depth to close games and to do the kind of stuff that just win two basketball games and gets you in the topper end of the Western Conference. Because it's like, I guess it's Halliburton, but then you have to talk to, have a very uncomfortable De'Aaron Fox and conversation with De'Aaron Fox and be like, hey, this has to be Halliburton late, because he does stuff where he puts guys on skates and can get us a bucket late in games better than you can. But I mean, he's still so good at, and so crafty getting on the lane, that I'm like, I don't know if I want to do that either. I don't know. The Kings, I'm excited to keep watching them this week, because it's a weird team thus far.
Yeah, definitely. I'm interested to hear what your thoughts are the rest of the week, because they have a good slate of games coming up for sure.
Yeah, you get the Wolves in there. I forgot who else is in there. Maybe the Jazz, I want to say. So outside of the Kings, though, because people are like, I cannot believe this podcast, the CT podcast, just spent 12 minutes on Kings Pistons. But look, folks, we're NBA junkies, and this is what we do. And it's fun. This week in basketball for you, though, who have you been watching? Who have you been keeping your eye on? Who have you been thinking about a lot?
So I have been thinking a lot about, I mean, kind of every team, but I think a lot of what's stuck with me so far has been Cleveland. I mean, Cleveland has been an absolute blast to watch this year, especially because I grew up in Cleveland. I still live there right now. So I didn't really grow up a fan or anything, but this is the first time since LeBron hasn't been here that the team has really been worth watching. And not even just that, like they have like real compelling players on the team. Like Evan Mobley has already become the best player on the team. Unfortunately, he's going to be out 2 to 4 weeks with an elbow sprain that he got during last night's game against the Celtics. But they're just really funky. Like you mentioned the funkiness with the Sacramento. I don't think there's a team that's funkier than the Cavs. Like routinely playing three bigs on the floor. Darius Garland has been really good this year and taking another step. And then Ricky Rubio has like a career high usage rate in, I think, year 12 for him. It's like right around there.
Like the Knicks game was preposterous.
Oh yeah, he was absurd. I mean, he's gone from being a guy who was just kind of a non-shooter to now I think he's fifth in the league in pull-up three-point percentage.
He's a Puget God now?
What?
He's a Puget God?
Yes, he is. And it's just been kind of really awesome to see how some of the guys have gelled, how things have worked. I definitely have questions about what it's going to look like moving forward, especially with Mobley out, because he's been so vital for what they're doing. But I don't know.
What is he doing? So for folks who have not watched enough Cleveland yet, what is Mobley doing? Why is he so good right away? And why are the Cavs' three big lineups not tanking?
So Evan Mobley is somebody who, for me, if the season ended today, he would be on my all-defense ballot.
He's been, oh, wow.
Yeah. He's been... you know, there are a lot of guys who you see them, and I think yesterday was like the first game where you really saw like, okay, he's a rookie. He struggled a little bit with Al Horford guy. I mean, he's been in the league for forever, and he's a very good player still. And he really got Evan on both ends of the court in some ways. But I thought, you know, like I wrote an article about this last week, and like you can go and look at it. Like there's a possession where he guarded Damian Lillard on, you know, like in the final 2 minutes of a game. Out on the perimeter, like Damian Lillard called for an isolation on him. He defended it, blocks a shot before he even gets to the rim. You know, he's playing out at the top of a 3-2 zone and defending Trae Young. Like, he's just kind of done everything and done it so well. He leads the league in contests right now. He's up there in blocks and steals. And it's not even just about like numbers and counting stats, but it's just more like the tracking data helps you kind of realize what you're watching on court. Like, he covers ground like, I think only really Giannis and AD can. There just aren't people who are that size that have the coordination, fluidity, and actual ability to put everything together and you know, be able to consistently make plays like that without fouling, which I think that's what's been most impressive about him. Like, most rookie bigs who come in are going to foul like crazy. Like, Jaren Jackson Jr., as much as I love him, like, when he first came into the league, I mean, it still has been a problem at times with how much he fouls, because he's still getting used to it in some ways. But
is that the way they're calling games? Do you think he would be this effective and not getting called for those fouls if he came last year?
Okay. Especially, too, like, it's like, his timing and verticality at the rim is really good. Like, he has been fantastic at not jumping into somebody. He's good at getting just straight up. And he isn't really somebody who's benefited from some of the more physical play on the perimeter. Like, I do think there are some guards who would be getting more foul calls. Like, especially if you look at somebody like Alex Caruso right now, he's been awesome to start the year and he'd still be very good with things getting called differently. But I think he would get more calls. But Evan has just been like, he's using his length. It's less about, you know, using physicality or bump offs or anything to drive anybody off.
So what's his true, like, in the best five-man unit for him, where does he slide in? Is he the three, the four, or the five?
Oh, I think right now it's the four. Okay. I mean, we saw yesterday with Jared Allen out for his first time this season, Evan slid up to play the five. And you saw, like, some of the struggles with him for that. Like, he benefits being able to play the four on offense a little bit more. You know, I think there are easier ways to get him set up with things, especially with how the roster is structured right now. Like, on this roster, I think it makes the most sense for him to play the four. Maybe on some rosters it would make sense for him to be the five, but he's still like, he's 7'1" and like 220 pounds. He's not very, maybe a little bit heavier than that, but like, he still needs to add on weight. And he might be a guy who never functionally has like a ton of mass, but like, he's got the ball handling skills and the perimeter skills to be more at the four. And I think it's a little bit more ideal for him, just the way that things will space out if he's playing there, especially considering, like, you know, who's going to be guarding him. Ideally, I think it's at the four, especially too. Like, he's a guy who can be your primary rim protector, but like, in the best scenarios, he's, you know, roaming a little bit more off ball. And kind of like what he's done with the Cavs this year, Jared Allen has really nailed things down for them in the paint. And Evan has just kind of covered ground like crazy. Has been his job to just really solidify things for a team that lacks a lot of true stoppers on the perimeter.
So what about my follow-up was, because, like, do you think you've seen anything that changes your perspective on Garland and Sexton and Okoro? Like, what is that three-man grouping going to look like? Obviously, injuries have played a role in how much we've seen of those three, but, like, are you a believer in that group? Because, like, for me, I'm a believer in Garland. I'm a believer in Mobley. I'm a believer in Jared Allen. I don't know. Like, you can find Isaac Okoro's anywhere. Like, I think those kind of guys just grow on trees. Colin Sexton, I've never been a big Colin Sexton guy. I think he's just he's not old enough to transition into the third guard, the Reggie Jackson role that he was meant to be. He was meant to be, but he's still young enough where you're like, well, maybe we can talk ourselves into him. What have you seen, and what do you think what kind of growth potential is there for Garland, Okoro, and Colin Sexton going forward?
It's tough because, like, if you just look at the box score, this has been Sexton's worst year in the NBA. I would come right out and tell you this has been his best year, in my opinion, after watching him his whole career.
So what's the discrepancy?
The discrepancy is just, like, right now it's because his shooting numbers are down. Like, he really is somebody who struggled with having the new ball. There are a couple of guys who have really just not gotten along well with the new ball, and he's one of them. I don't know entirely what all plays into that, but he's a total creature of habit in terms of, like, I'm sure you've heard a little bit about, like, some of the crazy, like, gym rat stories for him.
Yeah.
Like, it's legit in terms of talking to people from Cleveland and what he's like. I do imagine, like, some of the guys who are more, like, super process oriented like that, it probably is impacting them more. But overall, like, okay, so even though his assists are down, I would also point out, like, he's making the best passing reads he has in his career. Part of it's been him having the ball in his hands less, which I do think has been better for him and for the team. Like, he honestly was starting to really find a groove, and I think he had this entire year. Like, he really developed as an off-ball scorer last year, was continuing that this year, and I think that the offense was starting to benefit him and he was benefiting from it too. But you know, you just saw some of the, you know, when you're not shooting well, it really impacts everything else. But the defense was better. He's still not a good defender, like, just to be blunt, but he was playing the best defense that he had in his career by a significant margin. He was just way more active, fought over screens better, doing a lot more of the smaller things that would make him, I don't like saying like winning or not winning player. I guess it's fair, however you want to put it. But I do think in some ways he's been oddly characterized in both directions. Like I land somewhere in the middle. I don't necessarily agree that he has to be a third guard right now. I think he's capable of being a starter in the league. And he was doing that this year. Like, again, if the shooting numbers are consistent with who he is as a player, I think it looks a lot different. In terms of his viability with Darius moving forward, I would say I'm with you. I don't think that that's a viable backcourt moving forward. And I think the Cavs have been, you know, like if the Cavs thought that was a viable backcourt moving forward, they would have paid him already, as far as I'm concerned. So I think they kind of have showed their hand with that. With Isaac, it's interesting. He had probably his best game of the season last night.
Mm-hmm.
In some ways, that's not saying a lot because he has had a really rough go of it. It's tough because you have to look at it in two ways with him. Like, number one, he's a guy who I think is going to be all defense in a year or two. Like, he's that good. But also, like you mentioned with his size, he's kind of small for the three. He's really not a three. JB Bickerstaff has come out and said, like, I think he's a two naturally. I would agree with that. But then, okay, well, you have to do a lot more offensively if you're going to be playing the two. And he did that yesterday. He was way more aggressive driving. He got to the foul line. That's what you need from him. Like, he just has to make very quick decisions. He took threes. It's about making them more. But he had a really good close last year. I want to say Darius missed time. And it was him and Sexton were the starting backcourt for a while. And he was just, like, gunning away from outside, taking, like, four or five per game. It wasn't all falling, but like you saw the process, like, okay, I'm just going to be confident. I'm going to take the shot. I'm going to keep driving, work on my handle. And I thought there were some good dividends from that. I want to see more of that play out. I think in some ways, not that Collins' injury is a good thing. Like, I really do think the Cavs are going to miss him. And we've already seen that play out. Like, they could have used him a lot yesterday. They've really lacked having somebody who can just get them a bucket. But I do think, like, Isaac needs to come along quite a bit as a player. Part of it is the roster has done him no favors in terms of getting to his ideal outcome as an offensive player. But also, he's got to be a lot more decisive with the ball in his hands, for sure. And the finishing has been a real problem, too. Like, because, like you were mentioning, I mean, he's like again, he's smaller. OK, well, when he's 6'5", going up against somebody who's 6'7", or 6'8", he really struggles to finish through contact.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, when you look at him, he's incredibly strong. He's very athletic, but he's not a great leaper off of like one or two. I think it's more off 1 foot, which is where you're going to get most layups from, because he is relatively stiff in his lower body, not super flexible. And that really shows out when he's trying to go up, but he's also gotten to a stage where he's not really trying to draw contact. So it's like, he's at a very awkward stage of his career as an offensive player. And I do think it's going to get better with time. I think some people have been a little bit too harsh with him. But it definitely needs to be better fast.
I think it's just the lottery thing. It's just like where you find guys, it just matters. Like, if you found him at 18, you're just like, wow, we're thrilled. This is awesome. Like, if he develops any more, if he finishes over bigger guys, that kind of thing, like, that's great. Then we nailed it. But where he was taken, you're like, no, we need you to have more upside than this. But that's why the draft is just so hard to figure out. And I don't know. Like, I'm dealing with that right now with the Hawks. Like, the Cam Reddish fall from grace over the last few games has just been brutal for me as a Cam Reddish defender for years now. And he got up to that great start. He ended the Bucks series so well that I was in. Because I've been just sell DeAndre Hunter for months. I think we're at a year now of me just being like, we got to get out of this. This is the knee, everything. There's just certain guys, I believe, the availability thing is just never going to 100% be there for him. The point forward stuff we saw at the beginning of last year was awesome. And you're like, oh, if we could just turn injuries off, like, it's NBA 2K, I'm all in. This is great. This is great. But now it's a doomsday situation in Atlanta. We're 6-9. We get the Celtics tonight. But I don't know. It's really hard to remedy the situation. I mean, he's now gone with his wrist, so he'll be gone for several weeks, and the rotation gets slimmer, which is something I think is actually going to benefit the Hawks. I'm interested to get your perspective on them, if just having too many guys has been something you've seen, where they've talked about it as a team of just trying to integrate so many different people because they did not have to do this last year. But yeah, I don't know. Part of it's just Trey not getting to the line as much. Part of it is just things are weird in the half court. Part of it is that they really have a great collection of guys, but they don't really have a bunch of guys who know what to do in the half court and that they can rely on. Like, Trey is still kind of having to do everything because him and Collins are the only one really, really busting their tail through the first 10 plus games of the season. But I don't know. What is your perspective on Atlanta? Do you think there is reason to panic? Do you think that they're going to figure stuff out? What have you seen from them?
So I wouldn't say it's time to panic. It definitely has not been good. I have not liked very much what I've seen from the Hawks. Like, obviously you have the first game against the Mavs, absolute beatdown. And I was like, okay, I'm in. The Hawks are here. Like, they look great. They look ready to go. That just hasn't been that team. I do wonder a little bit what things are going to look like with DeAndre out, which sucks for him being out. Because even though, like, no, he hasn't been perfect, but I thought he's relatively been pretty well. Like, I mean, played pretty well. He's been probably their best defender at the point of attack, which, I mean, part of it with Cam, too, with how much he's taken a step as an offensive player, less taking a step, taking a bigger role as an offensive player. His defense has not been as good as this year. It's been a lot less consistent to me. You know, you have Danilo Gallinari. I don't want to say he's fallen off, but he's been odd in the rotation. It feels like in some ways he's like not playing enough for what he mostly can do. Like, I agree with you. I think that there's almost too many good players on the roster to find a way to make them all work together. So I do wonder if DeAndre getting hurt has some kind of impact on that. It does shake things out. I mean, Kevin Huerter has probably been the biggest disappointment of the season so far for Atlanta, at least for me. Like, I mean, he just signed a pretty significant contract after having, I mean, maybe being the fourth best player on the team during the playoff run behind John, Clinton, and Trey. Like, he was absolutely fantastic and extremely important for them getting to the Eastern Conference Finals. Just has not shown out the same way to start the year. And I do think part of that is, okay, well, he's not handling the ball as much. The second unit has just been kind of a disaster. And part of that is playing all bench lineups. Just that is unfortunately a Nate McMillan staple. Like, Nate McMillan is a very, very good coach. That's been one of the things with him as long as I can remember that has been a little bit frustrating. But they've just never really been able to find ways to stagger the lineups that make sense and keeping, you know, the right groups together. Like, they haven't been able to find that yet. I still think this team is so talented that they're going to hit a point where they do. And in some ways, injuries might clear things up that way. We've seen that happen with teams in the past. I think if a lot would hinge for me on Clint Capela, he's looked a little bit better over the last week. He has not been himself most of this year. He hasn't been as good around the rim. He hasn't been as efficient. The defense hasn't been as good either. I think part of it is it's tough for him coming off of, you know, an extended playoff run. I mean, for the whole team, they were still playing in the Eastern Conference Finals 3 months ago. So that,
I mean,
he's
minus 7.2 per 100 possessions right now.
Yeah,
he's been a negative. And that's the thing is, like, I mentioned to people, I'm like, if Onyeka Okongwu doesn't go down, I think a lot of the early problems are solved. I think he was showing out, and I think he's going to be a defensive assassin, because, like, I think we're what, 28th in defensive rating, but still top five, top six in offensive rating. Like, everyone's shooting well outside of Huerter. Like, it hasn't been the shooting, which actually scares me more, is that I think Collins isn't shooting 37% all year. I don't think Trey is shooting 39% all year, so I think those numbers are going to start to go down. Cam's at 37%, but I also wonder, like you mentioned with Capela's playoff run, but like, I wonder if these guys just, they're ready for the playoffs again. Like, they got so much out of the playoffs last year, it's hard to psych yourself back up after going through that grind and knowing that, like, hey, we just have to make things work. We just have to qualify for the playoffs, and we've shown that it doesn't really matter, that it's going to be very difficult to knock us out in a 7-game series. So it's hard, I think, for teams that just get on the precipice like that. They were so close to even making the finals, which is just preposterous, that like to get psyched up for another 82 game season not too long after. I wonder if that's playing a role in the defensive lapses. But are you seeing anything specifically that is really, really killing them on the defensive end?
I really do think it's been Capela.
Like, so it's just Capela, yeah.
He has not been great defensively to start the year. He hasn't looked as mobile. And part of this is tough because I don't want to be overly critical. Like, we saw this last year was an issue too. Like, he started the year pretty slow. He's been a slow starter for much of his career, at least the last couple of years in Houston into his first year with the Hawks. So I don't want to be like hitting panic mode yet. But if this is like, I mean, let's say, okay, 12, 15 games from now, if Clint still looks like this and is not as mobile and doesn't have the same bounce, I think that's been part of the issue too. He has not looked the same vertically in terms of how he's, you know, getting up around the rim. Then I would have more questions there. And I mean, I think Trey's been fine defensively. Like, for what, I mean, you know, from what you're getting from him, you know, like, he's been active. He's been doing what he has to do. I just really think a lot's going to come down to Clint and how things are working there. And I mean, they've changed things up defensively too. They've changed up some of the schemes. They're doing some dumb stuff with switching that I really just don't understand why they're doing it.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think, again, like, I do think they're going to have the personnel to work it out. But like, again, like, you just, okay, you can't have the Noah Gallinari switching on the guards. That just can never happen. I don't care if it's late shot clock or not. I don't want to see it happen. Like, he can't do it. It's just, they've kind of been shooting themselves in the foot this year,
yeah,
as far as I'm concerned. So that's where I'm at with it. Like, I don't, again,
but the cool thing is they have the talent. Like, they're 14 deep. They have time to experiment and figure it out. Like, I don't know. I'm just curious what kind of situation that they have long term after the run that they went on last year. I just, ownership, I imagine, with Ressler and company are not enthused about this early start. So we know Cam Reddish, I mean, with your Cleveland Cavaliers and the Indiana Pacers, like, that could have been a possibility this offseason. So I'm just curious what the company line is for the next couple months, if they're still flirting with 500 or something around that. I don't know. We'll have to see. Tyrese Maxey. I've not gotten to a bunch of Sixers yet, so a lot of it's just the numbers and just seeing the possession clips and stuff like that. But like, do you think he's made the leap? And also that, like, what is Tyrese Maxey's upside? What can he be? What level can he get to for Philadelphia? And does that change the calculus for how we should view Philadelphia over the next several months?
Yeah. I mean, he's been very essential to what they've done in the early season. Like, a lot of it's been Joel. I mean, Joel is playing the best defense he has since he came into the league during the regular season. And that's important. With Tyrese, though, I don't know if I'm ready to say he's taking the leap. Like, he's taking a leap. I don't know if it's, like, the leap to what he's going to be.
Can he be an all-star?
I think not this year, but, like, okay, in time, I think he could be. Like, he's putting up very good numbers right now. I wonder how sustainable that is because some of his shooting splits from three have been kind of ridiculous. I don't think they're going to hold up. But the thing for him is, like, a guard who gets downhill and puts pressure on the rim. Like, honestly, he's not really – like, he can be a lead ball handler, but ideally he's not your best playmaker because he's not a great passer, if we're being honest. Like, he is good at generating reads from his scoring gravity, but, like, he's not a guy who's going to move a defense without, you know, having to get downhill first. So that doesn't mean that he can't be a real, like, a true, like, primary initiator in time, but it's going to take time and reps. So he's on an odd trajectory. Like, okay, well, we want you to develop, but we also need you to be awesome right now because Ben Simmons isn't playing. We have, you know, nothing to show for that. And, you know, Joel's in his prime, so we need to win. And luckily, I mean, he's putting it through so far. He's been incredible in terms of how he's getting to the rim. The biggest thing has been, like, he had moments earlier this year where he looked completely hesitant from outside. He had two games in a row where he didn't even shoot threes. And that was an issue for him last year, just not being super willing to take threes unless it was off the catch. I mean, a lot of teams are willing to go under on ball screens whenever he's running pick and roll, which negates a lot of his ability to get downhill. He's starting to willingly take stuff off the dribble now, and it looks good. It's falling. Teams are adapting to it, and I think it's just about continuing that. For me, Like, I think he's a guy who can be maybe a multi-time all-star. It just depends. And by that, I mean, like, okay, maybe it's like two or three. I don't want to put a ceiling on what he can be, but I also don't want to say, like, yeah, this guy's going to be an MVP candidate or anything. It's been very promising, but I also just would want to pump the brakes a little bit because, you know, there things are going to tighten up, especially once he gets higher up on the scouting report. It's going to look different. But also playing next to Joel Embiid is a great way to look pretty good. So I'm definitely very high on him. And the other thing, too, I mean, his defense has been really good. Granted, he's small. I think he's only 6'3 with a relatively small wingspan. But he's been really feisty at the point of attack. He's good getting over screens. He's solid in help. He's gotten better there. He's not awesome off the ball. But he just does a lot of things that the team really needs. And I think he's getting close to an area where you can say he's an average or slightly above starting point guard. And that's pretty damn good considering it's year 2 for him.
I like it. I like it. The Warriors, best net rating in basketball, plus 12.9. This is all without Clay and without Wiseman, which actually probably is a net positive there. Do you think this is sustainable for the rest of this season? Do you think that they are this good?
I think they're very good. I don't think that it's sustainable, no.
Okay.
I have to look up the exact number, but they've played the majority of their games at home so far and haven't really gone on a sizable road trip. That's not everything, but also they have a pretty significant home court advantage. I do have real questions about whether or not Draymond Green can keep up what he's doing because he's been incredible. Like, Steph has been their best player, but Dre has really set up what they're able to do. He's been just absolutely fantastic on both sides. He's been way more aggressive on offense, which has been good. Like, he's been good on relocation. Like, okay, if he's not being guarded, he's going and setting a screen for someone, or he's slipping into space and trying to get to the rim in ways that he hasn't in a couple of years. So that's been really nice and a huge boon for their offense. But yeah, Steph has been amazing. The biggest thing has just been their role players are a lot better.
Jordan Poole is preposterous to me.
Jordan Poole's looked a lot better. Yeah, he started the year rough. He hasn't shot well from outside. He's really fun because I love watching guys who are like just absurd movers, and he's one of them, like a guy who just moves a ton off the ball. And
absurd so kind of like movers. I like this. Who's on this list? Who are your absurd movers right now? It's Jordan Poole and who?
Steph.
Jordan
Poole. Like going through history, like Ray Allen, like guys like that who flow off movement, like are adept at running off screens, like Reggie Miller. Clay would be one of those guys for me. He moves a ton off the ball. Chris Duarte in Indiana does that a lot. There are a lot of guys who, like, you know, like TJ Warren is another great example in Indiana. Everybody who's coming to mind is, of course, somewhere else. Like, the point being, like, guys who are good at moving off the ball to get to their spots because not everyone is capable of just creating from a standstill. I think that's what's been impressive about Jordan is finding that in himself and getting good at it. It helps being in a system that really, is built around that, but also that takes a lot of self-discipline and work to actually get to doing that. And it's just kind of made a real headache for defenses in some ways, because he is so good at getting to the rim out of actions. Like he gets his handle's pretty rudimentary right now. Like, it's not great, but it's enough where, okay, if he's able to shake someone off a screen and get some separation, he can get going downhill and create some problems there. But then if him and Steph are on the court together, okay, you're worrying about two extremely good shooters off of movement who can get to the rim and also create plays for others. Like, their offense has been, I think, what's been most surprising. I thought the defense would be solid again this year because they still had some of the same core from last year that made the defense really good. I was curious on how the offense would shake out if it would be too Steph reliant. This year, they've just really had the guys who fit into their offense what they do. Because last year, a lot of people were critical with Kelly Oubre, and I get it to an extent, but also Steve Kerr didn't adapt his offense at all to incorporate Kelly Oubre. Like, we knew coming in, Kelly Oubre is not a good ball mover. He's not a great, like, his efficiency isn't always there. And also, he's just, like, never quite been the guy who you want to have in the ball. Like, you can have the ball in his hands, but in the right scenarios. And I thought last year, Steve Kerr, frankly, did a pretty damn bad job in terms of getting the ball in his hands in the right scenarios, playing in a way that made sense for him. So it's just been better this year with the way that they've built the roster out, for sure. And Steph and Jordan Poole have been a big reason for that.
Yeah, I just think it's weird with Oubre because you don't want to lean too much in where you're like, are we really building our offense around Kelly Oubre? And also, he was dealt a kind of a rough hand because they signed Kelly Oubre as a last-minute save-the-season type deal because of Clay's injury. So I think he was kind of in a tough bind there. And I don't know.
For sure. Like, you don't want to build your offense around somebody. Like, that's for like most definitely. Like, Steph is there. Build your offense around Steph. But I do think, like, you have to find ways to, okay, we know if Kelly gets the ball on a short roll, like that shot is going up. It is not going out to anybody. Okay, well, you have to find ways to adapt to that. I think to Steve's credit, he's been better with that this year. Like, I really have liked the way that, A, they've talked about Jonathan Kuminga, and B, have utilized him so far. Like, he had a solid game the other night against the Bulls. Like, just finding ways to use him in the proper scenarios and get him developmental reps without infringing on the offense or on his development. And it's not an easy line to cross, but it's been encouraging for sure.
Who's been better to start this year, KD or Steph?
Oh, this one is tough, man. Like, Steph has been incredible, but I do think I lean KD. KD has just been, like, his shooting splits have been insane. And it's not even shooting splits. It's just, like, what he's doing as a shooter inside the arc, around the rim, getting to the line has been kind of ridiculous. He's been very good defensively as well to start the year. He's having one of his better passing seasons. I mean, it's tough to downplay Steph. Like, I think in some ways Steph is, like, he's been very good, but I think he had a little bit of a slow start over the first five games in terms of what he was doing inside the arc. Like, KD is shooting 64% on two-pointers, which is just kind of insane, especially considering his shot dial. Like, he's taking a ton of mid-rangers, a lot of pull-ups.
I don't think De'Aaron Fox is shooting 64% from the mid-range.
You what?
I don't think De'Aaron Fox is shooting 64%
not even
from the mid-range.
Yeah, no. I can guarantee you it is not close. He is trying, but no, it's not. I mean, KD has just been, like, they've kind of smoothed out their offense now over the last week or so, especially as James Harden has gotten acclimated and being back to closer to who he is as a player.
Does he look right to you now?
Not fully. Like, I think he looks a lot better, but he's not, like, fully there to me. He still looks very good, but like, the last four or five games have been a lot closer to last year. But I also was not one of the panic people. Like, I think it was pretty clear, like, yeah, he got injured. His hamstring was going to be a problem. He's a guy who plays himself into shape and gets ready for the season by playing a ton of pickup in the offseason. And he didn't get to do that at all this last offseason. So I'm not really super surprised that he's had this kind of start. What's just been wild is how their defense has really gelled together. And a lot of it's been, like, having to rely on KD shooting, 61% from mid-range, 78% of the rim, which is just a bonkers number to look at. I don't think the Nets are in the position they are without how well KD has played offensively. I mean, same thing for the Warriors, but again, so much has been on their team play, and Brooklyn's really been trying to figure things out. Like, Brooklyn has quietly, I mean, been just about the second or third best team in the NBA. Like, they started off slowly, and now they're 10-4 and tied for the number one seed in the East, which I don't think has been quite at the forefront for people. So for me, it would be KD. Obviously, it's pulling hairs. I think Steph and KD have been two of the three best players in basketball this year by a wide margin.
Who's the third?
Nikola Jokic. If I had to give out the MVP today, it would probably be Nikola Jokic.
Wow. What's he doing better than last year?
The defense has been even better.
Okay.
Like, he went from being, like, a little bit above average defense last year to now his activity's been absurd defensively. I've been really impressed with what he's done as a rim protector. Like, obviously, he's not your traditional rim protector, but he's done a lot in terms of, starting to find better ways to get at people, get more up in their grill. He's been just pushing the action instead of letting it come to him, if that makes sense. It sounds like a cliche, but that's really been the thing with him. He's always been, like, a do-your-job defender, and now he's just finding ways to make it hard on offensive players, which is not something I expected from him. And he's also just improved his efficiency even more. Like, and that's with Jamal Murray and Michael Porter Jr. both missing significant time. It's just been kind of a revelation. You're like, I never really know how to talk about players sometimes that are that good, because you don't want to take it for granted. Like, when I was a kid, it was like, oh, this is LeBron. I can go see him play whenever I want because I live 15 minutes away from the arena. It is what it is. And then you get to a point and you're like, that's LeBron James. Like, he's one of the, maybe the greatest player of all time. I'm not saying that's Nikola Jokic, but like I thought last year was the top of what he could do. He's been even better this year. I mean, 26 points per game on, you know, true shooting. That's 10% above league average, which is insane. I mean, career high rebounding with 14 per game. He's still dishing the rock like crazy. Like I mentioned with the defense, he's taking more threes and hitting them at an even higher rate than he did last year. He's just been crazy, man. Like, and he has the same kind of 2-point shooting numbers as KD. Like, he's shooting 59% from mid-range right now. Like, I just, like, you literally cannot defend him. The only way to defend him is double him and hope that the guy that he throws the ball out to misses.
So when Murray comes back, do you have them coming out of the West?
I have questions. Like, okay. I do think the Nuggets, when healthy, to me, are probably, other than the Suns, the best team in the West.
Not a Jazz believer.
I am not a Jazz believer right now. They have looked bad for me, especially over the last week or two. Like, they're 3-4 in their last 2 weeks of gameplay. Their offense doesn't have the same kind of pop that it did last year. Even, I mean, they're still second in offense this year, but just in watching, like, it's not the same. Their offense bogs down a lot easier than it did last year. They don't have the same kind of movement. I don't really think the defense has been all that much better, if we're being honest, in terms of what it's supposed to look like, you know, at the next level, like any of the additions they've made. I've liked some of, like I like Eric Paschal. He's done some nice things for them, but I still think they have real questions for me in terms of what they're going to be in the playoffs. And they're just very much a wait and see team for me. They've been a good regular season team for 3 or 4 years now and have had a lot of the same problems pop up in the playoffs. So I don't want to be reductive with it. I'm still waiting to see how things play out and if things change up for them during the year, but I am not a Jazz believer currently.
Ooh. It's rough for me because I had Jazz Bucks in the finals before the year.
It could happen. Who knows? Mm-hmm. I still think there's a very good chance that they get there, but I need to see more. It has not been a great past 10 games for them.
Yeah. But thankfully, it's a long season, so we'll see.
It is a very long season.
It is a very long season. Well, Mark, this has been great. Thank you so much for making the time this evening, man. You should not be a stranger. It was great talking ball with you, man. What can the good folks check out from you across the internet this week?
Yeah, well, first of all, thanks a ton, man. I appreciate you having me on. This was a blast. I'd love to talk anytime. You can find me on Twitter at mschindlernba. It's mschindlernba. I almost forgot how to spell my last name. It's been a long day, man. That's all I can say.
Mm-hmm.
You can find pretty much anything I'm doing up there. I'm very active on Twitter. All my stuff goes up there. I have a Patreon that if you enjoy my work, most of my I cover the NBA draft. Most of my draft work and just draft notes, game notes, stuff are going to go up there.
I got you a draft note. Are you ready for this? I got you.
Yes.
So I'm local Knoxvillian, Tennessee.
Kenny Chandler's going to be good, man. I like Kenny Chandler a lot.
He's quite good.
Yeah, he's very good.
And it's amazing watching what we were doing last year with Keon and Jaden versus what Barnes is running this year. Tennessee is running.
It's almost like Kenny Chandler can actually handle the ball. It's amazing.
It's not bad. It's not bad, but I mean, to this point, it's ETSU and UT Martin, so we'll see what it looks like with better competition. But it is fun. It is fun getting shots up and the offense getting more innovative. I like it. I like it. Chet Holmgren still continues to baffle me. That just the look and feel and everything. But we'll see. We'll see what happens there. Mark, thank you so much for making the time. I greatly appreciate it. I will talk to you again soon.
Sounds good, man. Have a good one.
Nicely done, nephew. Chase Thomas Podcast. Hell yeah.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.